Blog Talk Radio.
Come on, that's a bunch of horse shit. Lando Calrissian was a black guy, you know. He got to fly the Millennium Falcon. What's the matter with you?
Who said that?
I did. Lando Calrissian is a positive role model in the realm of science fiction fantasy.
Fuck Lando Calrissian, Uncle Tom, nigga. Only some white boy got to invoke the Holy Trilogy. But this. Those movies are about how the white man keeps the brother man down, even in a galaxy far, far away. Check this shit. You got Cracker Farm Boy Luke Skywalker, Nazi poster boy, blonde hair, blue eyes. And then you got Darth Vader, the blackest brother in the galaxy, Nubian God.
What's a Nubian?
Shut the fuck up. Now, Vader, he's a spiritual brother, you know, down with the Force and all that good shit. Then there's Cracker Skywalker. Gets his hands on a lightsaber, and the boy decides he's going to run the fucking universe. Gets a whole clan whites together. And they going to bust up Vader's hood, the Death Star. Now, what the fuck do you call that?
Intergalactic Civil War?
Gentrification! They going to drive out the black element to make the galaxy, quote, unquote, safe for white folks.
And Jedi's the most
insulting installment. Because Vader's beautiful black visage is sullied when he pulls off his mask to reveal a feeble, crusty old white man. They trying to tell us that deep inside, we all want to be white.
Well, isn't that true?
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane.
No, it's Max, Darrow, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
You got Lando Calrissian. He's a black guy. Folks, that's your Batman. That's your Batman, Ben Affleck. That's from the Chasing Amy movie from about a decade or so, decade and a half back. And Ben Affleck was on. It was in that, and it was a great movie. But I don't know. Lando Calrissian, that was a black guy. Folks, welcome to the Grindhouse edition of Afternoon Radio, featuring Captain Kirk, the uncanny Daryl B., and myself, D-Bert, a.k.a. the Afro Nerd. The call-in number is 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. Of course, we talk about pop, pulp, comics, sci-fi, video gaming, you name it, we got it, during the first segment of the program. And then at 7 p.m., we go into more serious fare, still a nerdic fare, Afro-nerdic fare, but more serious, with Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. Let's go to a nerdcore groove first, and then we'll get into the comic book, sci-fi, fantasy discourse. This is the grandiose and talented Adam Warlock, simply entitled She-Hulk. We'll be back in a few moments.
Well, if you want to Fantastic Four, call her Jennifer, actually track that, call her Miss Walters, treated with some respect, that She-Hulk, remember, mergers and acquisitions, a S.H.I.E.L.D. corporate takeover division, and every claim defended, counterclaim third party intervention, with a motion for summary judgment pending, your honor, my co-counselor here, she's green seen it 7 feet tall. You might have seen her fighting in a brawl outside the front of City Hall, taking out a skull. She'll be handling cross, so you know the best private practice, unless you wanna ask if Nelson and Murdoch are still taking these clients. Nichols, that shot, her move west and so all of New York needs to know who's the best. If you want Jennifer Walters to see, if you're dealing with personal injury or tragedy, call up Jennifer Walters, attorney at law, strongest lawyer that you ever saw. If you want Jennifer Walters to see, if you're dealing with a personal injury or tragedy, call up Jennifer Walters, attorney at law, strongest lawyer that you ever saw. No conflict of interest, no hostile witnesses in front of Miss Jen Walters. Listen, kid, you better answer her. I can't help you now, you're sitting on the stand, and she can tear the building down with a flick of her hand. Work ends, happy hour, where she has a few. She's on the board of the Future Foundation. Grand jury testimony, depositions, what she's been to. All negotiations are simple. Go ahead and send a gamma ray enhanced woman with a mind that's bigger and quicker than almost any human, with a license to practice and some proper law schooling. Street smarts to get the jury swooned. Just talking about Jennifer Walters, attorney at law, super heroine, winning if you're playing ball. The retainer is reasonable, you just gotta call. I don't think you'll regret it at all. Nah. See, I tell most people that they shouldn't be a lawyer, cause I was a lawyer, right? But if you're gonna be a lawyer, you might as well be like She-Hulk. Yeah. If you want telepathic speed, if you're dealing with personal injury or tragedy, call up Jennifer Walters, attorney at law, strongest lawyer that you ever saw. If you want telepathic speed, if you're dealing with a personal injury or tragedy, call up Jennifer Walters, attorney at law, strongest lawyer that you ever saw.
Wow, what a beat. Correction, by the way. It's about She-Hulk, but it's entitled Attorney at Law. And again, that was from Adam Warrock. Simply go to adamwarrock.com, pick that up and others that we will be playing throughout the broadcast, other cuts. And they're free downloads, adamwarrock.com. That was, of course, Attorney at Law. Let's get into it, folks. First up, the captain. Captain Kirk, you're needed on the bridge. Let's get to it.
Same bat channel, same Daryl B time. Let's go.
Yeah. Speaking of the Daryl B, the uncanny one, he enters.
If you're going to blame Affleck for that, blame also the writer of Batman 66 meets Green Hornet. That's all on you, Kevin Smith, too.
Yeah. Well, you know what? That particular, you know, Chasing Amy, the early stuff that Kevin Smith was about. I thought it was pretty cool, but I just don't know. I mean, listen, we will know, 2016, the end result of this thing.
Hey,
you know,
actors read the lines that they are written, and guess what? The director approves it too. So yeah, that line went through Kevin Smith also. So, gotcha.
This quick tease, almost a tragic tease. I say tragic in a playful way, with Bruce Timm's Strange Days homage to the Batman animated universe, with his take of a 1939 version of Batman. It hit the cyberwebs a few days ago, also hit Cartoon Network in the middle of last week, and I could tell from the way the reaction was to this thing is, First of all, as far as animation is concerned, the technology has improved. So now Bruce Timm is still at the height of his powers, and you see a better Batman visually, even though it's definitely a Batman of a truly golden age, serialized Batman. But when I looked at this, I said, wow, this would be so cool. Only 2 minutes. Kevin Conroy also, he does what he does excellently. Only a couple of words, like maybe 2 words he said in that thing, but you knew it was Kevin Conroy. Just a beautiful thing. Hugo Strange, definitely Detective 27 come to life. What were your thoughts on this, Daryl?
I told you guys about it 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago I told you about it. Look, be on the lookout. DC Nation, this is going to pop off. And once it does, I know what the reaction of everybody is going to be. And sure enough, you guys proved me right. It's made available all over the web last week. And guys watching, oh, why isn't he still with DC? Oh, what? Oh, come on. Like, hey, Warner Brothers, how did you let this dude out of your stable, and now he's firmly over at Marvel? And as a result, I will say this. He's overseeing their cartoon projects, and there's been a noticeable improvement in the writing of the last couple of animated things that have come off through the Marvel pipeline. All right? Animation, they still got a ways to go to catch up to DC, but that's an asset that DC let drop and go over to the competition. Bruce Timm with Batman, you know what? It's like an old, comfortable pair of pants. You know that you're never going to improve upon it, but you like putting it on. It feels like home. So it was great to see that back together again. Back to you, Afronerd.
Yeah, you know, Daryl, you mentioned his positioning now. Like, he stepped down as the head of DC Animation. So now, what's the other gentleman's name, man of color, that's taking
Paul
that spot?
Dini?
Not Paul Dini. You know, he's well known. He's a black guy that has taken over essentially that spot that Bruce Timm had.
Duncan Ruclo, let's see.
Gary? Is it
Casey?
Gary? I'll look it up. I forgot. He's well known. But he's still affiliated with DC because he hinted that there may be more to come with this. You know, you have people's mouths watering. And in an interview, he said, well, I can't say.
But he's
and when
no
he says,
longer
I can't
exclusive.
Say that,
that's the thing. He's no longer exclusive. So there are talks, and I will say this right now, there's no definite proof, but there are talks that Dini and Timm are talking about doing a Marvel project together. What that project could possibly be, I don't know, but this is just it. What I said was he was under an exclusive with DC, and they let that lapse. And that's when he walked away to pursue other options. I know Dynamite is looking to get into the game, into the animated game, and that would be a natural with all the pulp properties that Dynamite has, you know. And that would be the guy to look up, you know. Marvel, we could, you know, Punisher, Daredevil animated. You could think of the projects that he could do over at Marvel. That's why DC letting Dini and now Timm get out of their exclusive and being put back on the marketplace, it sort of upsets the apple cart a little bit, doesn't it? Back to you, Afronerd.
Yeah, because, you know, when you look at this 1939, 1940s version of Batman, you could definitely see, and for many years I've always hoped visually that Marvel would somehow be able to utilize someone like Dini or Timm. And if you saw Captain America and with that same kind of visual sense, because listen, Marvel is, we can't critique Marvel on the live action cinematic world. We can't on that end, but their animated stuff is just poor. If we can get Bruce Timm to do a cat film, a period or modern, but a period film done almost in the same way we saw Batman, all hell will break loose. I mean, it will be it's what they need.
But
straighten out for Marvel, straighten out their animated end.
But I will say, Marvel's been getting better. Marvel's been getting better, all right? I'm not used to the animation style that was in Heroes United with Iron Man and the Hulk, but the writing on that was superb, okay? And their cooperation with Madhouse with the Iron Man Rise of the Technovore and then the latest Avengers Confidential with Black Widow and Punisher, that animation and stuff was light years ahead of what they did with Ultimate Avengers. So they're getting better. They're not to the level that Warner Brothers is, but part of the reason Warner Brothers was on such a high level was because they had Deanie and Tim overlooking everything, along with Dwayne McDuffie, along with Man of Action. They had all of them in the stable. Now they let Deanie and Tim slip out, and they're applying their works at Marvel and at other places now. We'll see what happens. For me as a Marvel head, that only means my animation is going to get better. Am I expecting JLA, JLU, Batman, Superman, the anime? No, I'm not expecting that. But I'm expecting a rise in quality, and there's no denying that their last couple of animated joints have been better at the House of Ideas.
Yeah, definitely. Cap, what are your thoughts on this? Did you get a chance to check out this Strange Days animated short for the 75th anniversary of Batman?
Well, I'll be terse here. I agree totally with Daryl. Marvel's animation is somewhat lacking. If I was grading their animation, I would say I would give it about a 69. You know, it's passing. DC, the one thing you definitely do have, you do great animation. And if by you letting this individual get out of your control, that's just stupid at the end of the day. Because that's what's really making you right now. It's the fact that you do very good cartoons. That's the reality of it. So I don't know what's going on inside your decision-making warehouse. I don't know what you're doing. But what I would like to see this guy do is something like the Invaders. I know that's a little more complicated, but I would love to see something like that instead of Captain America. That's all. Back with you, sir.
Ooh, an Invaders cartoon.
Yeah, that's even
wow.
deeper.
Wow.
that's even deeper.
Oh, that, hey, Paul Dini, Bruce Timm, you need ideas? Call Afro Nerd. You guys know the number. I gave you cards. Anyway, back to you, Afro Nerd.
Yeah, he went deeper because I'm looking at Cap, but yeah, the Invaders that's a totally different take. Because actually, I was thinking of for Captain America 3, we don't know what's going to happen there. I mean, it's going to be more involvement with the Winter Soldier and, you know, what comes out of that. But
well, you know,
I would like to see some kind of callback to Captain America, like a period piece or period intertwining, or going back and forth in time for the third one, not to be so much in the present, but really have him reflect on things from the past and how they affect the present. We saw Zola as someone from the past coming back into the future space. So, but they've got to actually visually show us, Captain America. The more I think about it, especially with the quality of this past Cap. There's so much they can do to make that franchise beyond stellar, and part of that is to tap into the period Cap, and maybe we can see an android Human Torch, a Toro, or however they want to do that. They might not even show a Toro, but to tap into an Invaders film, or what is it? An All Winners? Was it All Winners?
All Winners Squad.
Yeah, All Winter Squad, that would be interesting.
But so far the early rumor is we may be getting that, but not the way we think. Because I suggest to people pick up Captain America by Ed Brubaker, The Two Americas, and you'll learn about the 1950s Cap, because the rumor has it that that's what we're going to get. We possibly will get him, Jack Monroe, a.k.a. Nomad, the Winter Soldier, Falcon, and that's what it's going to be. And if everybody knows about the 1950s Cap, let's just say he was pure McCarthyism incarnate. So that would be an interesting dynamic if that's the rate they go. Like I said, this is a plug. Check out Ed Brubaker's Captain America: Two Americas. That would be interesting to see on screen, how they would twist that to fit the cinematic universe.
Yeah, you know, dovetailing off of this topic, I'm thinking of something else, with Marvel disclosing that they have plans for their MCU,
the Marvel Cinematic Universe, going into 2028. That's how far they have this planned. And some folks are not comfortable with that. For reasons, I don't know if it's necessarily fair reasons, but they're saying, you know, those in the media, folks that are close to this stuff, comic book heads, fantasy heads, they're believing that where if everything's so planned, there's no real room for ingenuity. There's no real room for, like creativity. In other words, if everything's planned, you can't just say, okay, well, we could come up with something off the cuff because it might ruin this thing. It makes things more cemented when you have plans going into another decade. Cap, what are your thoughts on this, the fact that they have this thing so planned out? This is so far removed. I hate to take a dump on DC or Warner Brothers. Well, no, I don't, but I'm saying it. This seems so far removed from how DC is getting down, where Marvel has this planned into 2028. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, here's the thing. This is what everyone has to realize. You do have to plan. That's one thing. Then you have to work a plan. Then, at times when you decide to work a plan, the plan doesn't work out necessarily. Then you have to be able to move. That's what they say in boxing. Everyone goes into a boxing fight. Pacquiao Bradley tonight, by the way. Everyone goes into a boxing fight, and they plan to do this, plan to do that. Then they get hit. Then you have to see how skilled you are. You have to understand also what the movie houses are actually doing. Either they adapt the novel, which you already know already, not every time, sometimes it's original screenplay, or they're adapting a comic book, which you know the story already. So that's a plan within itself already. Now, what happens is when it goes to the screen at times, just like when you translate a language, things are lost. Chinese back over to English, you know, certain things will be lost. Same thing happens when you adapt the comic book to the movie screen. Now, it's fine to plan, but let's understand what's driving these movies. AfroNerd went to see Captain America, so did Daryl B., so did myself. Now, we all know it's a Marvel movie. You're supposed to stay to the end of the movie. What does the end of the movie mean? That means when the screen goes off in a Marvel movie. That's what you stay for. Now, if you look in the theater, most of the people, at least in the theater that I was in, they left, and they know it's a Marvel movie. But all the geeks and nerds, the true geeks and nerds, will stay. So what's driving this is not really the geeks and nerds. It's pop culture. That's why all those people left. It's pop culture. Now, the geeks and nerds will never get enough of Marvel movies or any superhero type of movie. That's what geeks and nerds do. Doesn't matter. This could go on for the next 200 years. If you could live for the next 200 years, you're fine with that. Just roll them out. Just make them good movies. But general audience, there's always a possibility. General audience gets their fill of this type of food, and they say they have enough. And there's always a possibility that they put out two movies and they don't do well. They can handle one movie not doing well. But when two movies with these type of budgets happen, then all of a sudden there's a problem now in the universe. There's a problem within the force. You have to recalibrate. So essentially what I'm saying is you do need to plan, and you have to work a plan. But at the same time, you have to be ready in case your plan does not work out. And that's really what's happening right here. So it's good to talk about, but Marvel is doing the right thing because that's what you have to do in a business model. And it's not the geeks and nerds driving this. Remember, it's a pop culture right now. It's a general audience. They're just taking everything from the geeks and nerds and using it just to make a whole bunch of money. That's all what it is. I agree with you, Sir AfroNerd.
Now, on the flip side, David Goyer, who's the screenwriter for Batman vs. Superman, at least that's how it's tentatively titled, or Man of Steel 2, he comes out and says that, well, there's, we don't know if there's any room for a cohesive DC Universe. He's, we're led to believe that Man of Steel is going to have all these other DC properties in the film. But at the same time, Goyer's saying that, you know, we don't really know how this cohesion is going to work, or he was very queasy about there being something that's analogous on the DC side to what Marvel's doing. So once they gain, we see folks that are kind of on the DC side, Warner Brothers side, they don't know what to do. They're so hell-bent on trying not to be Marvel that they're paralyzed. I mean, you have to do what you have to do. So what are your thoughts about that, Daryl? I mean, with a two-part question, really. Goyer's statements and also with your feeling on an extended play, you know, extended plan to 2028 for Marvel. What are your thoughts on that?
My thought is easy. Why even have it? Why even do movies anymore, DC? If you're going to be so paralyzed, if you're going to be so trapped by this, and the thing that makes this funny, David Goyer was one of the writers on JSA. JSA, right before Geoff Johns took it over, okay? And that had 40-some-odd superhero legacy characters in it that also crossed over with JLA, that also crossed over with Teen Titans. So he could write this. And he comes out and says, I don't know if it's feasible. That's about as dumb as that Marvel executive that said, well, people won't believe about a Black Nation Wakanda. you know, I don't know what's up with DC. It works. You have the fans clamoring for it. I'm not saying come out guns blazing, but have a plan. You know, in the latest blog I did, I spotlighted the Corey Blake and Carla Hoffman from Robot 6 over at Comic Book Resources. And they both had separate articles about Captain America. And they came to the conclusion, both of them separately, they took different angles to it, that Marvel's laying down tracks to the plan and following through on them. Whether it's good or ill, they are following through on what they plan. But they took time. They took time to recognize each character that they were going to put into the Avengers thing. So they were fully realized going in. All right? Now, to the people that are scared, oh, they're planning until 2028. Oh, there's going to be no room for originality. Oh, my God, what are we going to do? I'm going to give you three characters that should tell you not to worry. Oh, actually, four characters to tell you not to worry about. Okay? And when they planned this out, they never realized how big Loki was going to be. They never realized how much people would clamor for the Black Widow. They never realized, yo, the Thanos thing might really take off if we put him in the back of Avengers. And I guarantee you, when they started this, the thought of Stephen Strange or Guardians of the Galaxy would be creating such a buzz to the point where Guardians got their own movie and people are clamoring to have Johnny Depp play Doctor Strange right now. That never entered their mind when they started this. So there is room for end-arounds. There is room for audibles. There is room for all of that. But the problem is, we as nerds, we want everything now. And when we start talking like that, we end up with X-Men The Last Stand. We end up with Superman 3. We end up with Spider-Man 3. We end up with the Star Wars 1-3 trilogy where they just wrote all the ideas out there. Oh, they want it. We're going to put it in. We're going to put it in. This doesn't really make sense. We're putting it in. And it becomes a hodgepodge mess. That's part of the reason I'm kind of afraid for Amazing Spider-Man 2 right now. Because if you notice all week, Sony is just throwing out all of these things involving the Sinister Six and Spider-Man 4, excuse me, 2 hasn't hit the screens yet. But if you notice, fans, this is the exact same thing that they were doing with Batman versus Superman or Man of Steel 2 or JLA Origins or however we're calling that movie, where ideas are just getting thrown out, and you have nothing solid. That's why I keep on telling you every show, use your own brains. Don't be sheep. Make a plan. Stick to it. Warner Brothers, you're so much into the hype machine that you don't make a plan. And then you're all going 20 different directions at once. Listen, I don't say it to hate on DC. I don't say it because I overly love Marvel, but I will say it again. It's online now. Check out Marvel Assembling a Universe, all right? That little thing they did where they look at the process they do making the movies, okay? You don't follow the process. It's not going to be exactly like that. But the plan was they had a plan. It's killing me. It is actually killing me. All of these technological functions out here, we have all of these great actors out here, we have all these fans wanting to see it, and Warner Brothers can't get their S-H-I-T together. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
Yeah, we know what the old adage is, Daryl. They say if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. So that might be indicative of what's going on here. And actually, you can't just blame the WB completely because, you see, Sony, which you just went into with this Sinister Six, and you know everyone's scrambling between Sony and Fox and now the WB. Everyone's scrambling to try to somewhat mimic what Marvel is doing.
And they copy all the bad things. They don't copy the method.
They're not really going to be able to, I mean, you just can't go around following people. You know, obviously, my love for Marvel, you know, they would be better off, well, you know what I'm going to say, better off figuring out how to work together, get the lawyers in a room, and figure out how to do a true crossover with Fox and with Sony. But they're hell-bent on trying to go somewhere else with these Marvel properties. So much to the point that in Avengers, we will not be able to see or see the term mutant being used, even though we know full and well that's who Pietro, a.k.a. the Quicksilver, and Wanda, a.k.a. the Scarlet Witch, what they are.
But I will say this. DC, you want ideas? You want guys in that room that could put it together for you? Get the guy that did the Batman Dead End short fan film. Get the guy that did the Grayson short fan film, all right? Get just released, I believe it was Thursday, that Deathstroke fan film that was right there, being connected to Arkham, the newest Arkham game. Get those guys in the room. I'm not saying they have to put in all their input or anything, but as your writers fight like this, just go, you guys are fans. Would this work? Just let them go. We might avoid travesties like the Green Lantern film if you had a real fan in the room. We all thought Geoff Johns was a real fan, and we weren't going to get crap, but we got crap. That's what it is now. I'm taking it out of the bureaucrats' hands. I'm taking it out of the creators' hands. I want fans in the room now. That's what it is, DC, because you guys are killing me. I want that JLA movie. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
All right, let's go to a quick groove. When we get back, actually, I want to talk about a little bit about what's happening at Arrow. And how an emerald police officer may be showing up, potentially. Intergalactic emerald police officer may be showing up on the Arrow TV series. I don't know how that's going to work. And then I would like to talk about some books that I just picked up, just got in the mail a few days ago. So let's go to a quick, actually this time let's make it a Herb Alt groove. Then the next time we'll go back to a Nerdcore groove. This is Beck,
cell phones dead with a Herbie Hancock, little taste of Herbie Hancock in there. We'll be right back. Let's groove.
Strange ways come in the day. I put a dollar in my pocket and I threw it away. Been a long time since the federal die. Made a jukebox sound like I'm in my mind. Need to calm my worries, fix the thoughts. Pull my hopes like a juggernaut walks. Now let down souls can't feel the rhythm. Sorry, entertainers like aerobics victims. Hybrid people light a wooden matchstick. Toxic fumes in the burning plastic. Beats are broken, bones are spastic. Robots talking with a southern accent. Voodoo curses, Bible tongues. Voices coming from the mangled lungs. Need some grit, some get down shit. Don't need a good reason to let any for real.
Radio's cold, soul is
making all the damage felt like a laser manifesto, making manicure melt. Folded in like it's unlimited minutes, going through the motions of the sleeping pills. Treadmills running underneath their feet, and they feel like they're going somewhere but they're not. So let's put boots on the warehouse floor, coming to you like a rope on a chain. Throwing equipment from a moving van, grab a microphone like he's a little man. Now fix the beat, now brace the rest, make a kick drum sound like an SOS. In a tow truck, cause it's after dark and the dance floor full, but everybody's ever black.
Cell phone's dead, lost in the desert.
Okay, folks, we're back. Give you a taste of Herb Alt Groove. That was Beck, special remix featuring Herbie Hancock, Cell Phones Dead, Cell Phones Dead. The call-in number, as always, as ever. Again, folks, this is the Grindhouse edition of Afternoon Radio featuring The Comic Shop. The call-in number is 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. You know, we're talking about the potential for crossover properties with DC, with Marvel, and the difficulty that DC appears to have in doing this, and the effortlessness, on the part of Marvel. So we're hearing that with one particular show, the TV series on the WB, Arrow, they seem to be less reticent in having all these different villains and heroes relate with each other. They're hinting at it. They seem to be executing it. What's going on at this end of the universe on that one show? They seem to want to do some of this stuff. And actually, there's hints that maybe DC might explore more of a connection between the silver screen and the small screen, that, you know, maybe we might see Amell, maybe he might be the Green Arrow we might see in on the live action, you know, the big screen. I don't know, but it seems like they're doing a fairly decent job of it on Arrow, and there's talk of Green Lantern showing up, and the no power rule seems to be broken. What are your thoughts on that, Daryl?
That you know what it is? It's DC's starting to sink in. WB is like, oh, well, if this works, the Flash thing went over really well. Barry Allen went over really well. you know what? Maybe we can do the powers thing. And I guarantee you Mark Guggenheim is in there saying, what have I been telling you? Mark Guggenheim, of course, the one of the writers on Arrow and stuff, and a noted comic book writer, I'm telling you, it could work. We made Smallville work. There was no way, you know, go like that lasted 10 seasons. I'm not saying overloaded with powers, but we could put a few here and there. You see, where we would start getting worried is if Tom Welling shows up at the end of next season all of a sudden in Arrow. You know, that, you know, like, reporter Clark Kent, like, oh, God, here we go. You know, where they're going to go to the well once too many times. But it's been a perfect mix right now of nostalgia and action there. All right? It's something that you see now Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. with after Captain America, they're using that bump now to now we're going to introduce Marvel elements all over the place. All right? But one thing Arrow has, they've had those DC elements sprinkled in, which makes me think that the Warner Brothers heads had nothing to do with Arrow. where, oh, we can't do this, we can't do that, we can't do this. The guys in Arrow, and again, I'm giving them a compliment because I've said the show's been okay. You know, at least in this respect, it's been okay. It's been great in other aspects, but they've taken bits of DC around the DC universe and thrown them into Arrow. Some went over like gangbusters. I'm loving the dude playing Deathstroke the Terminator. I'm loving Felicity becoming Oracle. You know, I'm loving that. And some have been flops. I don't like it in Amanda Waller. Okay, you know, Shrapnel was going way too fast for me in this. You know, but they're taking risks. And it shows that they have a love for the material. Why can't they have that expand to other parts of their production arm? Their animation can't be touched. We've established that, okay? Their TV is getting better. And Arrow has been consistently good, at least to me, consistently good from the middle of the first season on. Okay, because the first couple of episodes were kind of rocky to me, but since the middle of the first season on, it's every week. It may not be the strongest show, but it advances the plot. And one of the things that Captain often says is quality. I'm looking for quality. And sure enough, Arrow's been given quality. Now you're going to introduce Hal Jordan or at least Ferris Aircraft? Well, you know what? Technically, we've already seen Ferris Aircraft in the show. Check out second season. Well, there's an airport scene where you see the Ferris Air logo on one of the planes. Just don't mess this up. Don't give Diggle a Green Lantern ring, you know. Just don't mess this up. That's all I'm begging. Back to you, Afro-Nerd.
Then your thoughts about there being a potential for a crossover with the Green Lantern. I'm concerned, I guess, with the graphics on that. You know, it's so TV just does a lousy job. Sometimes I think that what people are doing online is more impressive than what they do on TV when it comes to some of this stuff. What are your thoughts?
Well, so far, so good. You know, there's a lot going on the Arrow series, and they manage to do it where it's actually working. It's a lot going on. Different characters, just as the great Daryl B. said. And the thing is, you know, with giving Diggle a Green Lantern ring, as Afro-Nerd definitely just said, the graphics you got to worry about, but he's probably more or less the right character, because it's not going to be the popcorn version like how they did in the theatrical release. You know, it's more or less, it would be a little bit harder, rougher, you know, so that definitely works along with the show. So it would be interesting to see how and if they could pull it off. Also, too, what you have to realize, because they're not dealing with $150 million production budget, and then another $100 million for his advertising, which is really $250 million. They can take chances. So if it doesn't work and then the people are still watching, you could still keep going to a certain extent. You know, because if you ask me, Smallville never worked to me, and everyone was watching. You know, it lasted 10 seasons, you know, far as I'm concerned, but that's just me, you know. So you could play around with it, and let's see what happens with it, you know. You know, do a couple of episodes, try it, put it in there for 3 episodes, and if it doesn't work, you go back to, you know, something else. But then if it does work, you write it in a lot heavier the next season. Play around with it. That's what I would do. You know, so far everything is working, you know. We'll see what happens, though. Everybody messes up here and there, though. Back over to you, Seraph, on Earth.
Wait, but now that we bring that up, hey, Michael Rosenbaum, you know, we could have you cut bald again and be Luther on Arrow. We don't want Tom Welling back, but we'll definitely take Michael Rosenbaum as Lex Luthor back in Arrow. Hey, we'll take that. I think we're in agreement, Afro Nerd.
All right. I don't know if he would want to go through that. I mean, he seems to be eager to do that on a big budget, multi-million-dollar scale. I don't know if he wants to do that again for TV, but stranger things have happened.
I think that's the one thing on Smallville that everybody universally liked. I don't know anybody that hated Michael Rosenbaum as Luther. Everybody loved that.
That I did like.
I want to move things along a little bit regarding some books that I received in the mail, actually. As always, I'm late on some of this stuff, but I figure it's better to at least highlight them on our show. One is a Dark Horse comic simply entitled Skyman with a man of color as the titular hero. And I got the first issue in the mail a few days ago. I read it. And actually, I kind of like it. You know, it's very much a modernized take of a pulp hero. I would implore our audience to check it out, at least to support that. Javier Bargentino inked this thing. Manuel Garcia penciled it. And we see that President Barack Obama is, he's the president in this series. I mean, that's the cool thing. Our president is a pop culture figure in many of these comic books. I mean, it's a bit disturbing to see still some comics and some movie properties that when they have a president, they still have a white guy there. And, they need to modernize that, not Obama, but, you know, we saw that when it wasn't feasible in a few films. They didn't seem to be a problem with that. Now that we do have a president of color, now they seem to be retracting that on some level. But in some comics, they do have a likeness to President Obama as the president. But you will see that in this Dark Horse comic. So definitely pick up Dark Horse Comics' Skyman. And then we made reference to the Harlem Hellfighters. That came in the mail also. I didn't get a chance to go through that yet, but it looks very good. Kanan White, who's behind Uber as the illustrator, he's behind this. So that's what really intrigued me about it, his involvement. But then Max Brooks is the writer. And as we mentioned, I believe a few weeks ago, this Harlem Hellfighters, which is essentially a precursor to the Tuskegee Airmen with black folks in the military, except this occurred during World War I. And there's a whole bunch of history attached to that. The 369th Infantry Armory still stands for the public in Harlem. And Max Brooks, who is the son of Mel Brooks, legendary comedian, he optioned this take on the Harlem Hellfighters with Overbrook, which is Will Smith's outfit. So Will Smith, Max Brooks and Sony are behind the Harlem Hellfighters actually making it to the big screen. So I'm very elated about that. And I'll tell you more once I finish reading this thing. It's a pretty thick book. But the critique of it is highly regarded. I mean, the Washington Post had a pretty favorable rating on this thing. So if you get a chance, folks, go to Amazon. Definitely pick up The Harlem Hellfighters. Max Brooks is the writer. Kanan White is the illustrator. And lastly, there's a book that I'm glad I picked up. I didn't think I was going to, because it was a book that was – Daryl might have gotten this book. Did you get Leaving Megalopolis, Daryl?
Yes. Yes.
Gail Simone?
Mm-hmm.
This is more, folks, more evidence that you're seeing these folks going out on their own. I mean, you think of the Joe Simons and the Bill Fingers and the Bob Kanes and the younger Stanley Lieber and his brother. What's Stanley's brother? Larry Lieber?
Larry Lieber, yeah.
Yeah. What they could have done, daughter was around in the 30s and 40s, heck, even in the 60s. So Gail Simone goes out on her own through Kickstarter to really elicit funding to get her book going, Leaving Megalopolis. And I think she was asking around $30,000 or $35,000, and she ends up getting $120,000 for this book. And the book is beautifully illustrated. I got the hardcover version of it. I think in a few months, the soft cover will be released. But it was essentially only available to those who were able to get it through the Kickstarter campaign. But the demand on this is so high, and she's stating that so many folks are IMing her and trying to contact her through Twitter. We need more of this book. Give us more. They want a part two, so I think a part two is coming up. And it's a dark tale. I mean, the story is interesting to me as far as when heroes go dark, when heroes become evil, when there's it's another post-apocalyptic drama, but it's dealing with superheroes as the villains essentially killing innocents. So pretty deep stuff. She has a long-time illustrator with her on this. What's his name, Daryl? Califori?
Yeah, Jim Califori. Who
yeah,
you know from
Secret
Suicide
Six.
Squad, Secret Six, and various other stuff like the Exiles from Marvel.
What were your thoughts about this book? Did you enjoy it, and do you think this, you know, we seem to be a lot of writers doing this.
You know what? I'm not shocked that she did it. Why? One of her longtime friends was Mark Waid. And Mark Waid famously has done The Irredeemable and I forget the other one. The Irredeemable.
The one.
Yeah. So then Simone also did, like we just said, she did Secret Six. And there's something about playing these super types bad that captures your imagination, because you're able to take all of those familiar tropes that we know that goes with each of these heroes and turn them on its ear, okay? And I picked up Astro City 11 this week, okay? And as I picked it up, I have Kurt Busiek on my Facebook, and he put out a message because he just went to see Captain America, the Winter Soldier. And if you sit through the credits, which I hope you should sit through the credits by now, you know, you see all the creators that the story took parts from. I told people it took parts from different Avengers and Captain America stories in this one and melded it together. And he said, I'm sitting through the credits, and it's a beautiful thing to see my name on screen, but it gives me the hunger more to see some of my own creations on screen so I could get some of the money from it. You know, just an overt, he knows one of his stories plays a part in it. You know, the corporation-wise, they're getting X'd out of the money. LM for Gail Simone,
if that's made into a movie, please don't turn it into like a Wanted. You know, that this needs to be super. You need to have the superpowers. You need to see how the turning bad aspect, because it's a central part of the story. Gail, she writes bad supers really, really well, but she's also able. They may be the worst scum on earth. They may be the greatest people on earth, but she's able to write that humanity with them where you connect to them. Where, hey, this guy cracks planets, but he still has the same things, the same problems as I do. You know, this person has massacred this many people, but you know what? I could kind of relate. And that is a gift. Back to you, Afro-Nerd.
Yeah, well, we only have about 3 minutes remaining. I do want to open up one more thing. Speaking of Kickstarter, we're hearing that there's someone behind a Stargate Universe Season 3 Kickstarter campaign, but they're looking for $50 million. You know, that's pretty lofty. I don't know about that. What are your thoughts about that?
Was there that many fans? I mean,
I love Stargate Universe. I'll say that straight up. I will probably contribute, but $50
million. Yeah, $50 million. You know, you often hear if we had a dollar for every person that we'd be paying. Well, here's a chance, Stargate. What do we call it? Wormholers? What was our term for Stargate diehards now? You know, gators. I remember we had gators for a while. We were running with gators for a while. But anyway, Stargate diehard fans, you want this to happen? Time to pony up your money with your mouth is, okay? We just went through Gail Simone and how her diehard fans made Leaving Metropolis a hit, all right? You want this third season bad enough? You think you could get enough of the actors back together? Like, show them your support. And go like, hey, any amount will do. But if you really want it, this is the age where, hey, we're getting the Veronica Mars movie. Enough said. Back to you, Afro-Nerd.
Yeah, and also Robert Carlyle and Ming-Na are working. So we'll see how that works out. Listen, it's been real. Less than 2 minutes remaining, folks. We're going to go next door, of course, for Afro-Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. We have a lot to discuss there. Daryl, as always, man, you're necessary for the machine to continue, so we'll do it again next Saturday at 6 p.m., folks. Next up, 7 o'clock, of course, we have Afro-Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. Hold tight. Always a pleasure, Daryl.
Remember, Hydra is everywhere.
Spock with a beard?
I think not.
Rivetti, what's up?
I'm sorry, sir. It's just a difference of opinion that got out of hand.
What about?
I can't
It's really too silly to talk about, sir. I'd rather just forget about it.
I don't give a damn about what you'd rather forget about. Why were you two fighting?
Well, I said that the Kirby Silver Surfer was the only real Silver Surfer, and that the Mobius Silver Surfer was shit. And Benefield's a big Mobius fan, and things got out of hand. I pushed him, he pushed me. I lost my head, sir. I'm sorry.
Rivetti, you're a supervisor. You can get a commission like that.
I know it, sir. You're 100% right. It's never happened again.
It better not happen again. I see this kind of nonsense, I'm going to write you up. You understand? Do you understand?
Yes, sir.
You have to set an example even in the face of stupidity. Now, everybody that reads comic books knows that Kirby Silver Surfer is the only true Silver Surfer. Now, am I right or wrong?
You're right, sir.
All right. Get out of here.
Yes, sir.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man. What is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funk and lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a lock.
You're traveling to another radio show, a broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, D-Bert, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Good evening, people. This is the second half of our journey known as the Grindhouse, Grindhouse Saturdays. Of course, this is Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk, a.k.a. Afro Nerd Radio. The call-in number, as always, as ever, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. We have quite a bit of information to impart to our audience, and we love doing that. No one else seems to be doing it with any kind of efficacy, and to my estimation. So we're going to do that for you. As predicted, ladies and gentlemen, as predicted, we are starting to see people tweeting and texting those who are African-American. I wish I was African. Oh, God. As if they weren't already. They don't want to be RBs, which is regular black. Everything is coded nowadays. They don't want to be regular black. They want to be more exotic. They want to be, quote-unquote, African. We'll talk about it. Also, Urban Prep Academy, shouting out Chicago. We know that Chicago has been more infamous than famous for their violence with the pejorative or the colloquial Chirac term. We're hearing more of it being called Chirac. But we have a good story for the fifth consecutive year. The Urban Prep Academy Charter School has 100% college matriculation rate, all black male students. Again, 100% matriculation rate, fifth year in a row, and that again is the Urban Prep Academy. So we'll talk about it. Let's go to an Herb Alt groove, folks. Herb Alt, black rock, Afro punk, psychedelic soul. We do what we do. This is. Let's go to Jesse Johnson, classic groove from the White Man Can't Jump soundtrack. This is called Jump For It. We'll be right back. Let's groove.
Look at
boy, was it hard to take away myself from that groove. The inimitable Jesse Johnson, Jump For It, from the White Man Can't Jump soundtrack. This is, after featuring Captain Kirk, speaking of the captain, Captain, you're needed in engineering this time. Who would have thunk it? Let's get to it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Shoot my phaser at the opposition before I was able to beam up.
I was about to say that. Were you a beaming out of Brownsville or something?
There you go.
I suspect. I actually visualized that. With the sound effect, I was actually visual. I said, "Oh, you were shooting to get out of there."
They almost had me.
All right, Cap. Let's get into it. We have a blue area segment. We haven't done one in a while. And what would be apropos would, of course, be this continuing saga, a pleasant saga, with the Urban Prep Academy, which is a charter school out of Chicago that's gained quite a few accolades and media attention because of its success rate. We're talking about 100% college enrollment, college matriculation rate for 5 years in a row. And when you really go into the bare bones of what they're doing here, well, first of all, you know, listen, the charter school concept, for reasons unknown, I'm going to be honest with you, just how I feel about it, for reasons unknown, there seems to be a controversy about charter schools and when in juxtaposition with public schools, that we see many public schools. I can speak for New York here. And the recent fiasco with our Mayor de Blasio, that he seemed to be pulling back off his initial critique because he closed three charter schools, and it was a rather controversial move. You have folks that are very positive toward these schools, but they operate on a lottery system. They operate kind of on a school motif. They're wearing uniforms, and in the case of Urban Prep, they have connections to Georgetown University and to Oxford, where the students are able to go to these schools, and you know, for certain programs, they're able to actually go beyond the normal curriculum of a public school. So, I guess some may say that this can cause controversy and cause jealousy with the public school students. I mean, in the case of New York, we're talking about, this might be nationwide, but oftentimes these schools are housed on the same property as the public school kids. So the public school kids see these tired students in their midst with, just a better thing. I mean, it's a better product, and there can be resentment on that part. And, but, you know, you can't discount the success of these schools. So I have to applaud Urban Prep for doing this five times. But when you go down into how they do it, it's not rocket science. I mean, listen, they're getting donations. You know, Oprah Winfrey donated around $250,000. They received a $1 million donation at some point. Somewhere private donors. I mean, people, you know, want this to succeed. They've had a lot of, as I said before, a lot of media attention, Wall Street Journal, Chicago Tribune, Ebony, The Guardian, and so forth. Obama recently spoke with these kids. So this is a highlight. I mean, bottom line is Chicago is so rife with death stories and stories of failure, that to have a school in Chicago that has an all-black, you know, minority enrollment, and for it to succeed, all-black male, mind you, and to succeed smashingly, what can you say? I mean, it's obviously a cultural thing. I mean, listen, we didn't talk about this young man. There's another young man from Oakland. Now, I believe he might be Caribbean. He might be African. He also did a number like Kwasi Enin, where he has a high SAT score, multiple acceptances from Ivy League and highly esteemed colleges and universities, from another poor, one would say underperforming school district, but he's coming out gangbusters. But I suspect culturally, there's a plan for him. These are young men at Urban Prep that have a plan, and what we said for the last show when we talked about comic books and DC, it's the same thing. If you fail the plan, you plan to fail. It is what it is. Shout out to Urban Prep for the fifth time. Captain, what are your thoughts?
Well, let's get down to the nitty-gritty. You understand? They need to figure out how to replicate this another 1,000 times. Number one, the public school initiative is not really addressing the black male student, and let's just say black females too, not addressing their needs. Let's understand what public school is. You have 35 kids in a class, and regardless of wherever you go in America, you have 5 smart kids, you have 25 average kids, and you have 5 underperforming kids in every class. So public school is really set up. They always say, well, you get what you get out of it, what you put in and everything else. But it's really set up for the smart kid to do well. And when you check it out, a lot of times, not all the time, this is not absolute, but most of the time, the smart kid is the kid with the better home environment, the better training at home, and their parents a lot of times were smart kids too. That's the reality of what's going on. So we could actually say for the average and below average, it's just so-so. So you get a so-so result. This, what we have here, where you're taking students, I believe it's 240 this time, you're taking these students, and they're all pretty much doing well. So that tells me there that there's a system in place that allows for this to happen. So we need to replicate the system, ring the alarm, because black kids, you're not like everybody else. We have the statistical analysis. You have the highest out-of-wedlock birth rate. It's at, 77%. We have the highest incarceration rate. Come on, let's stop playing games. So you need a plan. These kids need a plan to be trained differently so we can get a different manifestation altogether. It's not working. That's ultimately what it is. So this needs to be replicated 1,000 times over. You know, we don't need just to be graduating 240. I need to hear numbers like 24,000 did this. You understand, this year, and we're looking to expand and then get all the way up to 240,000 did this. That's what needs to happen. That's what needs to happen. That is the blueprint. And when you have something that essentially works, I pulled a Colgate-Palmolive because this was their theology. Me too. We're just going to duplicate it and duplicate it again and again and again. That's what needs to happen. Back over to Seraphim Nerd.
Yeah, you know, just for, you know, we always have to give appropriate information and to edify our audience. The gentleman that I was talking about, the young master from Oakland, his name is Akintunde Ahmad. And I'm not sure of his ethnicity. Now, we know that he's a man of color, that he's black, but I don't know if he's African or Caribbean. Not that it really matters, but for the sake of this conversation, it's up for the next topic. It will matter for our discourse. But it's interesting that, you know, his appearance, he's aware of his appearance because he has dreadlocks, he wears street clothes. He's been labeled, quote-unquote, the street dude, but he has a 5.0 GPA and a 2100 SAT score, and he's accepted into 3 Ivy League schools. So he has the look of the quote-unquote street dude, but when you hear him speak, some interviews with this gentleman, he speaks eloquently. So, you know the audience knows how I feel about appearance. Now, I'll say this, and I spoke to the Oracle about this. Two things. Maybe because he is from Oakland and he wants to try to dovetail some of the taunting from being that smart with his crew, maybe he has to try to – maybe he's trying to fit in, at least from an aesthetic point of view. To me, if you are intellectual, you should look like an intellectual. But I'm going – at the end of the day, if you look how you look and you're able to speak up and people are able to kind of say, oh, okay, this guy's something. Because, hey, I have experienced it personally. I don't think I look like a street person by any stretch of the imagination. But I've been in situations where once I spoke, the tension went from 100 to zero. And I might have mentioned a couple of stories like that. But in this case, he has the oversized baseball cap. He has the dreads. But he speaks like someone who is whose trajectory is going toward the Ivy League. So maybe he will straighten that out. But listen, I've said this before, Captain. Even with Susan Taylor from Essence Magazine a few years back. You remember the story, Captain, where.
Yes,
there was a controversy with her speaking at my alma mater at the business school, the MBA program.
Yes,
and
sir.
Hampton is a pretty conservative outfit, which I'm very appreciative of. They're very conservative. And for their MBA program specifically, not for the student body in the general, but for the specific dealing with that MBA program, they did not really allow – dreadlocks or braids or anything like that. And we know how Susan Taylor looks. She has, her famous braids. That's her iconic look. And she refused to speak at Hampton because of that conflict. She felt that these kids should be able to look the way they want to look and blah, 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 blah. And Hampton said, hey, wait a minute. We are preparing these children, pardon me, not children, young men and women. These young men and women, far from children, young men and women, for the real world, to work on Wall Street. That gang, the Wall Street gang, just like the Bloods and the Crips have certain requirements, a Blood is not going to accept you walking in blue clothing, and a Crip is not going to accept you walking in with red clothing. So she has her own business. She did the damn thing. Obviously, she's in a position to look the way she wants to look because she owns her own business. Let these young men and women get there first. Let them get there first and then have an opportunity for self-determination. So with the case of Mr. Akintunde Ahmad, maybe he will change things around, but I applaud him and Urban Prep. Definitely. Excuse me. All right. Let's move things along. And also, just one more thing also, as I'm thinking about it. These stories are international. This story is at the Mail Online, UK Mail, that picked up this kid from Oakland performing so well. And we need more stories like this. We need to highlight these stories with more intensity, Captain. Because we've got to fight this meme. Now, for the next story, I think I might go to a groove and then go to the story. Has an article right on time. I believe the last time, I think maybe the two shows ago, I had mentioned that with the success of Mr. Enan locally, the local success here from New York, that you're going to have more African Americans resenting not being quote-unquote African. Now, that's a quagmire within itself. That's a quagmire within itself, that black folks aren't African enough there's been this long time, decades to centuries old reticence of being African and acceptingness. But now you're seeing this these high cognition stories, Captain. The successes, the cultural distinctions are being made now. And RBs, quote unquote regular blacks, are feeling a little bit inadequate when compared to EBs, ethnic blacks. Captain, I don't know. I predicted this. I knew this was going to happen, and it's happening. So let's go to a groove. When we get back, we'll talk more about the Roots article entitled Among College Students, Parsing Regular Black and Ethnic Black. We'll get to it. This is a rehearsal from the great one, Prince Rogers Nelson. Sticky Like Glue. I might play this as an outro because it's like 10 minutes long, so I'm definitely going to pull out the phaser, but I can't get enough of this infectious groove. Sticky Like Groove, the rehearsal, Prince. We'll be right back.
That's the part. Keep singing it, y'all. Oh.
Oh, what in the world is wrong?
Yeah, like,
Just a skosh of that infectious groove, once again, sticky like groove, the rehearsal by Prince Rogers Nelson. Folks, this is the Grindhouse edition of Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. The call-in number, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. Before the break, and actually, I guess the title of that song, Sticky Like Glue, African Americans, we're stuck. Sticky Like Glue. We're stuck with a minstrel culture that has clouded our judgment to a certain degree. And if you do the research, there's a lot to be proud of as far as being African American. And because of these recent stories of black folk from other countries, other experiences, which should be applauded, we're seeing ourselves in a separate way. And actually what's happening is of the overarching perception that's been foisted upon black folk in this country for decades, but more intensified post-hip-hop, post-civil rights. What has happened is we're stuck with the promotion of failure, which we talk about ad nauseum at this show. And we're starting to see ourselves distinct from countries, other experiences, other ethnicity. So now we're having this distinction between ethnic black and regular black. That's actually, I suspected this was going to happen. It has been happening, but more intensity now. I'm looking at this Root article, again, theroot.com, and a couple of tweets are going out. This is what we're hearing now. One tweet goes out saying, "Wish I was African. Being regular black is boring." Anna Bay. Anna Bay at Amazing Aura. Another person says, "My dad refuses to accept being regular black. Every time somebody asks about his heritage, he picks a random African country." The Kitchenista at Miss Angela Davis. I wonder if that's the Angela Davis that we know of. Not there's two Angela Davises, actually, of note. We interviewed one of them, the Fashionista. Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, the Kitchenista. Maybe it is. It might be. I've got to see what's up with that. It might be her. Yeah, but Captain, what is this deal? We'll go deeper into it. I'm going to read some parts from this article, but didn't I predict this? I mean, I jokingly said of myself that I will do the DNA test to see what part of Africa I come from. But now this is going to be an in vogue thing. This really is about Afro-nerdism in a way, Captain, establishing a meme. See, now that there's a meme, this is how scary the human condition can be about trends and memes. But now that there's going to be a trend, like there was a meme or is a meme that those of Asian descent are intellectually proficient. That's a meme, whether it's right or wrong. I was working out with one of my friends a few years back. He's of Asian descent. And I mentioned something about a porn actress. This is in the gym. Well-known porn actress. I can't remember her name. How she was built her own website and how she, even in the porn industry, she was making moves because of her ability to move on the internet early on. And he had said, "Oh, well, that's because she's Asian. And, you know, she's smart." I said, "But she's a whore." I said, "Yeah, but she's a smart whore," he said. So he accepted, and he even said he has been the recipient of job opportunities because they said, "Oh, well, you're Asian, he must be smart. Come on in." And he said, "I'm not that smart," but the meme has been set. So now we're seeing on the African side, we're starting to see the smart African guy, as if that's distinct from the smart black guy, as if black and African are two distinct things. Captain, your inimitable wisdom on this. What the hell is going on? Weren't we always African?
This is true. But one, kudos to you on your prediction. That's the first thing. The second thing is, not to go off on a tangent, but this is tangentially related. Now, years ago, when they first started, driven by black and Latin people, and the images that were put forth were by black and Latin people. Later on, when the corporations, when it stopped being independent, look at Wild Pitch Records, that was an independent record label, when they decided to buy up all the independent record labels, the people at the top, the white power structure, said that these individuals should be promoted. Then that in turn led to, now this is not absolute, this is not absolute, but a lot of it is the way it went down. That in turn led to having these minstrels that you see as the rapper, the Lil Wayne types running around all over the place, and then that became the image that the young black person started to emulate to college, and then their pants are sagging off their behind, and they're wearing do-rags, and they're wearing their hair all crazy. This is the image they're emulating. 13 people in a room decided we are going to promote these type of black guys, okay? Let's leave the KRS-Ones alone. Let's leave the Chuck D's alone. No, we don't want that anymore. Let's promote these type of black guys. 13 white people in a room. It might have been one or two black people, too. You never know. But 13 white people in a room. Now, for feces and giggles, they decide to say, all right, let's take them off their left foot a little bit. Let's just play around with it. Let's promote a few quote-unquote Africans, even though black people are really supposed to be Africans, you know? So, and let's see the ripple effect. Let's see what's happening now. Follow me with this now. In the Asian community, and I know this based on my own empirical evidence, and I have a lot of empirical evidence. Trust me on this one. Asian people, Chinese specifically, and sometimes Korean, they come to this country. Well, the Korean are better because a lot of times they know English a bit better, but it's still the same plan a lot of times. They want to become more proficient in English. They say to me, well, you know, once I learn English really well, and then maybe I go to the university over here, then I can go back to my country and make a lot of money. Or they say, my parents are farmers. They don't know English at all. So they sent me over here to learn English. Females say this, have a tendency to say this. They'll say this one. They sent me over here to learn English. And maybe I meet a nice guy here. Maybe I get a job here and I stay in this country. Or I go back to my country and I'll do a lot better because I know English. You see what I'm driving at there? That's a somewhat of an infrastructure. There's a duality going on there. They can go back to China, or they can plant their seeds here and keep everything going. What are you doing, black man? You don't have anything. You're just a satellite that attaches itself to the top heavenly body at the given time. So when the white power structure says left, you go left. When the right power structure says right, you go right. Now, some people would turn around and say, well, you know, the decision makers are white anyway. But you see, the Asian man is not so much concerned. They're just doing what they have to do. And if the white power structure has to take them, because they actually do, because they're doing better than a lot of the white people, so they have to take them. If the white power structure wants to do good in their business, they have to bring in the Asian man. Or they can build their little businesses, which they're doing, a lot of those mom-and-pop stores, or they can go back to the country. So ultimately, black people, you need your own infrastructure. And that's ultimately what this is all about. Stop worrying about left, right, and foolishness, you know, whether you're African or you're not African. You are African. Just get it right. Just can you compete? Can you compete? That's the problem. You can't compete. So you're worrying about every little tidbit. Back over to you, Seraph on Earth.
Yeah, that's what it is, isn't it? That's the conundrum. How are you African and not African at the same time? I mean, your ancestry is about Africans, just as African as the folks that are winning, that were captured and put into slavery, put into servitude. So You are African. It's just that there's been a campaign to make you feel bad about it. And if you do the DNA testing, of course, you can find out what tribe you come from or what a close, you know, a close approximation as to what region of Africa you are from. If you need to know that, I mean, I'm curious about it myself, actually, to know the lineage. But you can do this. But as far as this thing about being a regular black person and this lack of exoticism, this is a trend. The quote-unquote regular black has been in and out of being the exotic just by how the wind blows, if that's what really gets your goat. If you just simply do the historical research, there's a lot to be proud of. I mean, there was a point where many of these other black folk looked at the African American as a beacon of success. Say, okay, this is what's going on over there. We've got to follow these people. That's why they're here in the first place. But now, over the last 30 or 40 years, post-civil rights, even though the civil rights movement has to be applauded, I've been saying this for a bit now, there's some things that we have to look at also that might have been negative. The dissolution of black businesses might have been in part due to some of the gains from the civil rights movement. There should have been a self-determining or self-determination component, Captain, of the civil rights movement that says, yes, we're entitled to equal access just like anyone else, irrespective of race. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that we let go of black businesses and black stewardship. So, but growing up, the Oracle taught me to be very proud of Queens and St. Albans. I mentioned this before. Just St. Albans alone was, during the 40s, considered black Hollywood. All of those black musicians and professionals and black middle-class folks in the 40s and 50s were in this part of Queens. And growing up, and even I suspect to this day in my parents' neighborhood, many of these folks are generation Y, the millennials. They could care less. They could care less about this history. I mean, W.E.B. Du Bois was a resident of this area. Jackie Robinson, Lena Horne, Fats Waller, Eleanor Joyquette, James Brown, Roy Campanella. I mean, I can go on and on. I mean, powerhouses lived in this region alone. That's just one section. This is not to talk about, that's not even mentioning Harlem and the Harlem Renaissance, the Civil Rights Movement, Malcolm X, Medgar Evers. I mean, the list goes on and on. The science, the scientists. I mean, we can go on and on of quote-unquote, regular blacks that aren't so regular. In my world, they're damn near superpowered. But the problem is that we are being inundated with this cyclical culture of failure, never ending. Do your research, and you go like, huh, really, really? We were going to Harvard in the late 1800s, getting degrees in Vienna. We were doing what we were supposed to be doing in the harshest of times. But we still act as if it's 1940. So, I'm confused about this regular black thing. If this is what it means to be regular black, I mean, you know, come on. Jesse Owens giving the finger to Hitler. I mean, Hitler represented white superiority. A couple of runs by Jesse Owens debunked that. Hitler was in the stands upset. This is what it means to be a regular black. But these teenagers, young people, they're not well-versed in this history. They're not. And this is the, I just mentioned it off the cuff. These things I just mentioned off the cuff about being, quote-unquote, regular black. Now, I want to read this briefly from The Root. But I foresaw this, that I knew, because it appears that we are only motivated by trends. If we can make it trendy to be that Africans are smart, I mean, just, then this is so troubling. I've mentioned this before, James Watson, the geneticist, who now, he went away in a hole somewhere once he made some comment about Africans being of inferior intellect until someone took his DNA strand and it shows that he was 20% African, then he meekly goes under a rock. So what happened to all that talk about Africans being intellectually and cognitively inferior? That goes out the window now. So we've been believing this for a minute, and it's being debunked. The important part is that we have to get from under this malaise of ignorance and the promotion of ignorance. But the fact that Africans being smart, you know, in the 18th century, 19th century especially, you know, smart and African were mutually exclusive. I mean, because you were African at that point. You were African at that point. More African than you are now. And I'm saying this in quotes. So now we've gone full circle, Captain, because our president is also part African and is a Harvard graduate, Harvard and Columbia, if I'm not mistaken. So now we're getting to the point that from a historical perspective, it went from African to black. So now African and black are different. At one time, African and smart, mutually exclusive. Now, 21st century, Africans are smart, but you're not African now. So somehow, we've been successfully able, someone, it's not we, but someone, and maybe partially our fault too, we've actually been successful in being able to take out the black from African, to split the two, so all that negative energy and negative perceptions of Africans that's slowly being dissipated, but now you're black, no longer African, and now you can't take, you can't accept that goodwill. Captain, what's up with that? Isn't that peculiar? Now, we have to be honest about it. I'm using etymology, I'm using terminology. I'm using the term African and black separately. Africans are, now we're getting into a meme that's slowly being established that Africans are smart, but black people are not. Well, black people are African. What part of this equation is all screwed up? Explain that to me.
Again, you know, we have to look at the power structure.
It's
crazy. Where it comes from. It's coming from the power structure. Because if you just look at our history, you know, when you look at the black scientists and you look at some of our achievements that black people in general have done in this country, it's incredible when you actually look at it. It's really incredible. And I urge people to revisit from time to time, because I like to revisit from time to time, because I forget at times myself. I have to go O-S-H-I-T. That's literally what happened. There's a lot going on. There's a lot going on with us. So, again, I would say that's just the power structure. 13 men get in a room and just decide, let's go do this. And that's just what it becomes. Because the nature of, you know, American blacks, not all, you know. Now I'm going to use a salacious remark. You want to suck the anus of the white power structure at all times. And that's how you find credit in whatever you're doing. Build your own infrastructure. That's cool if they like you, but if they don't like you, so what? You keep moving. That's it. And that's what needs to happen, and that's the way forward. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, imagine not promoting failure. Imagine that. I mean, you can't continue to invest, because it's literally people are investing. We're talking about, if you really want to be technical, Captain, you're talking about corporations, billion-dollar corporations, whether it's Nike, Reebok, Coca-Cola, they invest in hip-hop, and by extension, they're investing in a certain form of black failure. Rick Ross, people invest in Rick Ross. I don't think people understand that. Someone invests in someone to say it's okay to Molly, to put Molly in someone's drink. Someone invested in Lil Wayne, Mountain Dew, to say that Emmett Till can be, you know, having sex with a woman can be as horrific as what happened to pays off Nicki Minaj to, with her oversized assets, to defecate on the image of the iconography of Malcolm X. I mean, you know, I don't know what to say. I mean, you know, you have people that are investing in the failure of black people, and they're winning. American blacks, I should say. So I want to read this quickly from The Root. It says, I'll never forget the expression on my friend's face during one of our African-American studies classes at Duke University when she asked to clarify her response for what seemed like the umpteenth time to the question, where are you from? After having answered, America. Look, I'm just regular black, she said, with an air of frustration plainly woven into her response. Regular black. It's because a sort of declaration used by some native black Americans to distinguish themselves from first-generation black Americans, those whose parents migrated to the United States from Africa to the Caribbean, Africa or the Caribbean. A friend of a colleague said that the term JB, or just black, was regularly used at her alma mater, Yale. And these terms have gained popularity as a convenient shorthand, particularly at top-tier universities and Ivy League schools, where a 2007 study found that approximately 40% of black students had at least one parent born in a foreign land, nearly half of the black student population. Meanwhile, only 20% of black college students across the nation have at least one immigrant and have a large market share at the very best colleges in America. I suspect that this imbalance is part of what was behind my friend's snippy response. On several occasions, I've seen black American friends who attended Ivies mistaken for Ethiopian, Ghanaian, Jamaican, or Nigerian. Like my friend, they were disappointed that their initial response of American, which perhaps sounded bland and generic compared with everyone else's, didn't seem to please or make sense to the people inquiring. It almost implied that black America couldn't produce high-achieving students who could gain admission to top-flight schools. I don't know, Captain.
Can I add something?
Oh, yes, certainly.
Okay. As I always say, you know, I've said this before, I've been to Nigeria twice. And what one of the Nigerian elders told me, now this is his words, he says, the American black man, quote-unquote black man, is a different tribe, but we've had many tribes here in Africa. And due to slavery, this is him now talking, he said, due to slavery, we became brothers. Before slavery, we were not brothers. We were all warring tribes. So I welcome you, my brother, because you are African. That's what he told me. That's what he told me. And I'm born in Jamaica, West Indies. This is what the village elder right there in Nigeria told me. Those were his words. Those were his words. Not my words. Those are his words. Get it together, black people. That's all I'm saying. Back with you, Sir Afro.
I mean, listen, if you want to go that route and say that you have the lineage, if you do the research and say, listen, it stands that I was born in Kenya. That my lineage dates back to Kenya. You can ride that way. You can say that now. Because we've seen some of these actors and actresses having done that. They've actually done if you need to do that. I mean, the reality is you're not really just regular black. You know, that's really, it's about your cultural acceptance. And, you know, if people need to pull out a resume, you can make your resume as exotic as anybody else if you want to do that. You do have relatives in Africa. You have relatives in Africa. So if you need to do that, do that. But It's all about how you see yourself and your perception. What makes you exotic, if you need to be exotic, is you embrace all of it. You embrace the African side, and you embrace what has been accomplished in America. But if you choose to embrace and believe some of this minstrel stuff and this downward thinking and this regressive thinking, then this is where you come up with this RB nonsense. That's what's going on, really. All right, we'll probably have to revisit this. I find it interesting, and I thought that, again, this was going to come up. I knew this was going to happen. All of a sudden, black folks are going to scramble for some kind of connection to Africa, where for centuries we were told that Africa was some crazy place, backward place. You don't want to be African. You didn't want to be black at one time either. Black was considered a pejorative at one point. Now we're black. You know, we were colored, Negro, black. We were black many years, many centuries ago. But you didn't like that. Then we had to come around to accept that black as a culture. Now it looks like we're going to have to fight to be African again. Even though we call ourselves African American, why do you call yourself African? And then some people say, I don't want to be. Yeah, folks that the Suge Knights, they say they would rather be niggas. I don't know anything about Africa.
All right.
I mean, you know, that's a whole different subset right there, Captain. Africans, blacks, niggas, niggers, black Brits. It's a whole mess. Dominicans, I see Sergio out there. I'm pulling them out too. Whatever. Whatever you call yourself, black man. All right, we got about 4 minutes remaining. You know, shouting out Sergio Mims from Shadow and Act, folks. Definitely check out his excellent site, Shadow and Act. And actually, it's something that I wish I had known earlier. They highlighted two things. They highlighted a gentleman that actually was the first black madman. We know about Mad Men, AMC TV's Mad Men, that talks about 1960s advertising culture. And at that point, it was, I guess even to this day, but even more so then, a heavily, heavily black, I'm sorry, pardon me, heavily white, Euro-centered culture, business culture in the 60s. But there was a black man from the 50s, I think he retired in 96, that bears the distinction of being the first black madman. So you did have black folks in the advertising industry. And actually, there's also a web series called Black Mad Men that really is kind of a low-budget answer to Mad Men, but it's Black Mad Men. So I find it interesting. I have a clip. I don't know if we have enough time. I'll try to see if I can throw it out there. This gentleman, he's like 83 years old, still very lucid, and he's talking about his time as a advertising executive during a time when there really were no folks of color in those positions. Let's see if I can find it. One moment, folks. I might have to revisit this on Wednesday's show because I don't really want to give really a short version. Roy Eaton, by the way. I'm sorry I did not give his name. Roy Eaton was the first black madman. Let me see if I can play a minute of this, and then we'll probably revisit it on Wednesday. Hold on.
My name is Roy Eaton. I have become primarily infamous recently as being the first black madman.
That's a great idea.
Is this really necessary?
I need a vacation.
I love the show. It brings back a lot of memories of the period. A lot of people have said, how come they don't have you on the show? Well, the reason they wouldn't have an African-American on the show is that I was the only one. I did not think of myself as the first black man in advertising. I was a copywriter and a music director. And I did my job.
Cheers.
If you had a storyboard that you wanted done, you tried to make sure it was done before lunch, because at lunch they'd go out and they'd have like at least two martinis.
Let me get a Rye Rocks and an Old Spanish.
And then they'd come in and frequently fall asleep on the desk.
And then you walk away from me. And then you take a nap.
One of my major successes was for a cigarette company. I wrote a jingle for Kent Cigarettes.
We only have about a minute remaining, folks. We will revisit Roy Eaton's accomplishments again, the first Black Mad Men, and also check out the Black Mad Men series, web series on YouTube, that is essentially a send-up of the regular Mad Men series, AMC TV's Mad Men. Captain, any parting shots? 30 seconds remaining.
I like the way he speaks. You know, just as you say, he's very lucid. I like the way the words come off his tongue. And he's very relaxed.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Very relaxed.
Well, you know, that's old school sharpness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a regular, well, actually, he's not quote-unquote regular black either. I think he's from the Caribbean as well. You know. 1950, though. 1950, they didn't make the distinction. But, you know, it is what it is. All right, folks, it's been real. See you on Wednesday's Midweek in Review. More Prince. This is Dorothy Parker, live. See you on Wednesday.
Come on out here, Rhonda. Dorothy was a waitress on the promenade. She worked the night shift. Dishwater blonde. Tall and fine. She made a lot of sense. Oh yes, I. Earlier, I've been talking love in a violent room. Finding when the lovers pass, I needed someone with a quicker with a mind. Just it was bad. Yeah, yeah. I ordered. Yeah, let me get a fruit cocktail and a pizza. Just be bad. She said, sound like a real man to me. Kinda cute. You want to take a bath? Do you want a bath? I said, cool. I'm a little bit better. Cause someone sound like a real man to me. Mind if I turn on the radio? Gee, my favorite song, she said, and it was Joni sings. Another girl, she said, woo, never thought I can be as cute as you. George Parker was.
Hollywood, Hollywood, Hollywood.